the monumental rock music event of the century. Tommy, the movie. Tommy is perhaps the landmark in the glittering history of international rock music. Now, after over a year of writing in collaboration with Tommy creator Pete Townsend and a rigorous 18-week shooting schedule in England, Ken Russell has committed this masterpiece to film.
So I think what seemed to be a slightly difficult hurdle to jump in the beginning, which was to have to do a sort of two-hour film with no dialogue whatsoever, but with just the entire action of the film being carried forward in song, seemed, well, a bit of, a hurdle, a bit of a daunting step. But as it was, it proved to be a very sort of stimulating thing, and make the film in a very concise manner, because if you have to get a whole idea, a whole dramatic situation over in 3 minutes, because that's how long the song lasts, well, it really makes you... You work hard to make it work, and I think it has come off. The good thing about the film, I think, is that you're not particularly conscious that you're listening to people singing. You get so caught up, I think, this is due to Townsend's brilliant songs. Characterization of the people coming through in what they're singing, that you forget after 5 minutes, you forget they're singing the story and they're just people acting. The more it stretches your imagination to get into that number of words, the maximum number of telling images. One doesn't want to just imitate. If the song's about a house burning down, it'd be very boring to show a house burning down. So one has to think of some sort of counterpoint image that will go add to the meaning of what the lyric is about, and that's what we've done, I think, and I hope. It's about cults, it's about dreams, it's about the disillusions and hopes and aspirations of the 20th century, and it sounds a tall order. And I don't think I even realised quite what it was about until I started it, but as it's transpired, as it's gone on, I've seen that's what it's about. And I think that's the strength of a good piece of music. You can like a Beethoven ninth without, what we would say, understanding it, but the more you hear it, the more you get out of it, and the more you realise it is about humanity. And I think this film that I've done, a lot of my films are set in the past, like Marlowe and so forth, but I think this is really almost a sort of social document of what the 20th century is about. It's about sort of false religions, false gods, pop gods, publicity gods. It's about the media, and it's about everyone's, as I say, hopes for the century and disappointments in it, and the destructive, you know, elements in materialism sort of are one of the things it's about. And I'm sure Townsend, when he first wrote it, was very conscious of that. And in a way, the film does continue on from Marlowe, which is about the jettisoning of old-time sort of Victorian religion and man groping towards some sort of religion to fulfill a modern need. And Tommy really explores that even further. In fact, an odd thing that suddenly, it only struck me when I was on the boat coming across, is that Marlowe is, as I say, trying to find a sort of God, as we all are, whatever you like to call it. God's rather an old-fashioned word, but seeking some sort of fulfillment, some sort of reason. And that's Marlowe's bag, and the Tommy opens with the same actor, and that's dear old Bob Powell, as Tommy's father, dressed in the same clothes. I hadn't realised that, so it must be a subconscious thing, standing on the same mountaintop in which he was in Marla, still looking for the same question. Because Tommy really is about a psych... I mean, Townsend, I think, and I certainly believe that life goes in cycles, and Tommy starts at the bad downward trip of the cycle. The sun is setting on a world which is going into a terrible ferment of destruction, and it starts in the last war, and the film ends with his son on the same mountain going up. He doesn't know why he's going up the mountain. It's like a salmon going up a river, doesn't know why it goes up the river. It just goes up the river because there's something in it, in its nature, that makes it go back to the place of its conception. And the film ends with Tommy going up the mountain and the sun rising on what we hope is a good cycle. He never saw his father because his father was killed, well, reported missing in the Second World War. He was a bomber pilot, and Tommy was conceived in this mountain area when his father was on leave from the Air Force. He goes back to the Air Force, his plane is destroyed, and he's reported missing, believed dead. And so, not unnaturally enough, his wife, after about 5 years, he's Tommy six by then, he's never known his father. He's seen this bomber that his father, he's seen a model of it that the father was ostensibly killed in. And he goes with the mother to a holiday camp, and she picks up a boyfriend who realizes she's got a bit of money, and thinks he's onto a good thing, decides to marry her, and they just go back to the house, and they're settling in, they're in bed together, and suddenly Tommy's father comes back, and he comes into the boys' room first of all, and he's still in his Air Force uniform, and the boy is asleep, but there's a little nightlight by the bed, and you see he's terribly scarred and his face is burned, and it's obvious that his plane crashed. He did survive, but in a very maimed sort of way. And then he's going to touch the boy, but decides not to, because in case he wakes the boy and would frighten him seeing his face. And then he goes along to Nora, his wife's bedroom, and finds her in bed with Oliver Reed, as it happens, this holiday camp Lothario. And It all happens in a flash. There's a very short, sharp fight, and he falls down, bangs his head, bang, he's dead. And Tommy, who's seen the father go out of the door in a silhouette, follows him along the corridor and witnesses the murder and blacks out. And his parent and Nora's mother and the stepfather sing, "You didn't see it, you didn't hear it, you say nothing to nobody." And the thing is such a psychic shock that he doesn't. He just blacks out totally, and that's when he becomes deaf, dumb, and blind. And the rest of the film, until he regains his sight, is the inner experiences which he later uses to gain strength to become this sort of pop messiah. It's even more of an opera than it was when it started off in its original form, when it was a selection, not a selection, but sort of a conglomeration of songs. And when I collaborated with Townsend on it, we realised there were some weak story points, and so I asked him to write some more songs to fill in the gaps, and the film's now got a beginning, a middle, and an end, which the original never had, and it is in fact an opera, and I think it's I think it's about time that the 20th century should produce an opera which appealed to the masses. We've had millions of operas, well, dozens of operas by very famous people, lots of English composers, American composers and so on, but they've reached a very minority group. And I think this music, although it's rock, he's just used a rock form. Well, Bach used popular dance forms of his day, and nobody thought any the worse for him. Townsend used a rock idiom, but he's such a, I think, in my opinion, such a great musician that the thing transcends its very simple form, because rock is a simple musical form, and I think will go down as one of the big operas of the 20th century.
This is superstar Elton John, who performs the Pinball Wizard, one of the major highlights of the film.
There was a certain amount of acting involved because I had to pull nasty faces and things. It was a very nice way to be introduced into sort of making a movie because, A, it's Ken Russell, who I've always admired. B, it's nice to work with The Who and Pete Townsend, and I got to sing one of the best songs in the film. One of the best rock and roll songs ever written anyway. And I also, it's a nice way of sort of easing my way and seeing what it was like to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and have to go and wait around. You know, it's like filming's completely different to pop music. You have to get up early, have an early call, then you can sit around for 3 or 4 hours while you're not doing anything. And I didn't honestly think I'd have the patience to do it. And even though we only spent 3 days on location, I enjoyed it. And then I had to come back and do a day of close-ups. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think he was tremendous to work with. He's a very easy person to get the best out of you, and in a nice way. He's got a tremendous sense of humour, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I thought it was great. I couldn't see it. I couldn't see myself as a pinball wizard at all. But then when they showed me the shoes that I had to wear, and then he tried to, I mean, I had to walk in these 4 foot stilt shoes with, I mean, I look absolutely enormous because I haven't seen any of the rushes or anything, so I can't say what it looks like. I've seen some stills, but I'm enormous, and Roger Daltrey, of course, is very short anyway. And so I'm just towering over Roger, and I'm sure the camera angles just make this so obvious that I'm this big giant, and he's this small little guy, and all my fans have come there to cheer me because I'm a champion, and they all leave me because I lose in the end. But I mean, the set he created for the sequence was just brilliant, absolutely brilliant. We had a lot of fun making it. I mean, all the kids in the theatre, we had 3,000 kids cheering and things like that. It was great. It was tremendous fun.
Creator of the original rock opera Tommy, P. Pete Townsend reflects on the making of Tommy as a motion picture.
Most of all, I feel relieved that at last it's happened, because I always knew it would. Relieved most of all because Ken Russell has done it, and that he was the guy that I always wanted to do it. I've always loved all his work and felt a great affinity with him. Relieved also because of the fact that I find I get on very well with him. He's a very reachable person. And relieved most of all because finally it gets Tommy off my back and onto the back of somebody that I think can carry it. I'm, you know, very, very happy. I'm looking forward to the film. I think it's going to be a great film, and I think everybody is going to love it. Very true to the original. Tommy fanatics need not lose any sleep over that. It's only been improved upon, in my opinion. That's all I can say, really. I mean, obviously, a fantastic amount had to be done to make it a reasonable film material, but it's been vastly improved. It's tighter. It has more flow. The surplus fat has been cut off, and the weak points have been reconstructed. I've rewritten a lot of the songs in the thing, and I've written, I think, about 4 or 5 brand new songs which contribute to the structure, and quite a lot of new incidental music which will appear on the album when it goes out.
When he suddenly can hear and speak and see.
Oliver Reed plays the lover, and Margaret, who's an amazing person, fantastic actress and an amazing singer. I think she's going to be one of the biggest surprises to rock fans, because she's a singer in, I suppose, in what I would call Judy Garland tradition. But hearing her singing like rock material, it's a joy, a real joy.
Fabulous time working with Ken. It's invigorating. It's a challenge. Always interesting. I'm always excited about going to work, which is a great feeling, because sometimes, many times, that doesn't happen.
You're a hero. You are famous. You're a champion of the young. You are rich, but it's so absurd to try to explain all the things you've done. You're adored and you're loved. Watch you play pinball, it's a fever, and you're the master of the game. And now that you're whole, you'll be champion of the
best. Keith Moon is playing Uncle Ernie, predictably. A man called Paul Nicholson is playing Cousin Kevin. Now, he's very well known to me. I've known him for a long, long time. He starred in the stage production as Christ in Jesus Christ Superstar in this country. And there's another guy, I think, who will, as one, a relative newcomer to the film world in the States, will probably surprise a lot of people. Roger plays Tommy in later life. I saw him for the first time today, actually, doing a bit, and he looks like he's going to be all right. I've been a little bit nervous on his behalf. It's his debut to the film business.
Welcome you all know why we're here. My name is Tommy, and I became aware this year. If you want to follow me, you've got to play pinball.
You'll find, with respect actually, that a lot of actors really love the idea of singing a song and appearing in what appears on the surface to be a young feeling rock flick. So many people don't see, say, the Jack Nicholsons of the world, the Peter Fondas, the Oliver Reeds and people like that, or even some of the older stars, you know, as having any interest in rock at all. But, you know, one of my biggest surprises is that Richard Chamberlain was originally set for The Lover in the early days, and the schedule didn't work out properly. He's a huge, big fan of The Who. I mean, that just seemed incongruous to me, because I've known about him since I was fairly young. But it's a fact. A lot of established stars do like the idea of singing a song, and maybe even being pop stars rather than actors.
Do you think it's all right to leave the boy with Cousin Kevin? Do you think it's all right?
Inevitably, the spotlight falls chiefly upon The Who member, Roger Daltrey, in the demanding title role of Tommy in his first ever movie performance. Listen to what Roger Daltrey has to say.
When we started, it was just a set of songs, and there was no storyline. And then we took it on the road, and it grew and grew. So I've been with it all the time. Now the script's been done, it's totally come together finally, and it's really incredible.
Ask along that man with a big red carnation. Bring every single person from Victoria Station. Go into a hospital and bring the nurses and patients. Everyone go home and fetch their relations.
Come to this house, be one of the comfortable people.
You get a lot of fanatical Who fans and different people that they sort of believe that I am Tommy. You know? I think maybe it's something to do with the media, reviews of shows we've done and things like that. Oh, it's a fantastic story. I mean, that's number one. I think the music was good. And I think there was a lot of good rock and roll hype behind it in the beginning, which there seems to be lacking in the business today. It really was hyped. When I say hype, I mean the sort of good old-fashioned rock and roll hype. Totally guided by Ken Russell, to be honest. I mean, I'll do whatever he says and hope for the best. I've never even been in a school play before, so it's quite a challenge. It's a bit difficult being blind, you know, and deaf. It's hard to imagine someone with that sort of infliction. I mean, it's quite difficult to ignore some of the things that's being done to me at the moment. I'm just acting what I think he'd do, and it seems to be what Ken wants. So, so far, so good. But you know, as it gets on, and remember, he goes through such a big change, that's going to be one of the problems, I think, later on. But I think I can handle it. And he's so great to work with. I mean, it just happens at the spur of the moment, and that's what's so good about it.
A British national newspaper recently declared that The Who had contributed more to pop music than anyone else except the Beatles, a view shared by many leading music writers and fans throughout the world. And perhaps just as significant, The Who is still happily performing and creating together after over 10 years. Quite an achievement in the ever-changing quicksands of modern pop. In 1969 came the world's first rock opera, Tommy, written and performed by Pete Townshend and The Who. To be more specific, Tommy was written and composed by Pete Townshend, but with John Entwistle contributing the Cousin Kevin and Fiddle About numbers, and Keith Moon supplying Tommy's Holiday Camp. To say that Tommy was acclaimed as a landmark in the history of international rock music would be an understatement. It would be truer to state it was, and is, the landmark. It was hailed as a rock masterpiece on all sides. Certainly nothing as ambitious as Tommy has been heard before. The idea of a rock group taking a single, continuous theme and following it through 1.5 hours of recording was unheard of.
Now he is deaf, now he is dumb, now he's blind. The guilty are safe, but always accused by his empty eyes.
Struck deaf, dumb, and blind by a terrible scene he witnesses when he is 6, his growing up, his hazardous journey through life, and the amazing happenings which follow his miracle cure, received acclaim and accolades from public and pop and classical music writers alike. They hailed the recording, apart from its qualities, as an exciting, moving, and tuneful story in music and songs, as a milestone in advancing the idea of rock as another medium for expressing thought and certain philosophical concepts. Now, Tommy is brought to the motion picture screen as a Robert Stigwood production, co-produced by Robert Stigwood and Ken Russell, and directed by Russell from his own screenplay based on the original work. Russell, say The Who, is the one man we most wanted to film it, probably the only man who could film it. Tommy stars Oliver Reed, Anne Margaret, and Roger Daltrey as Tommy, with many famous guest stars. Keith Moon himself is a memorable Uncle Ernie, and The Who, as a group, minus Roger Daltrey, who is busy in the title role, appear in 3 sequences as themselves. The spectacular movie is packaged into an original soundtrack album by Polydor Records.